Jewish tradition and culture obviously are not doctrine, and they do not define what we should do under the new covenant. But there is a lot of things we can learn by looking at what the Jews did and the way they do things. And the Jewish people do something very interesting on the holy days. Within there's the Jewish tradition, there's something called the Megaloth, and this translated is the festival scrolls. And these are the scrolls or the books that were determined by the rabbis of old to be read on each of the annual holy days. So what the Jewish people do, and many synagogues, the rabbis do, on a particular holy day, they will read a particular book of the Bible. For example, on Passover, they read the book, the Song of Solomon. It has to do with marriage and, you know, entering into a covenant relationship and all of that. On Pentecost, which is tomorrow, they read the book of Ruth. In Ecclesiastes, that's read on the Feast of Tabernacles. So the Jewish people, interestingly, read the book of Ruth on the day of Pentecost. And this was a book selected for that particular day. They call it the Feast of Weeks. And there's a great deal we can learn about Pentecost from this particular book. It is helpful if we understand why the Jews decided Ruth was the appropriate book. And it is even more helpful if we understand the lessons out of the book of Ruth that are applicable to us today as they relate to Pentecost. So what we're going to do in this sermon is we're going to look at the connection between the book of Ruth and Pentecost, or the Feast of Weeks, which obviously will be occurring tomorrow morning. The book of Ruth is considered one of the most beautiful pieces of Hebrew literature ever written. One commentator wrote that we have nothing so lovely in the whole range of epic and idyllic poetry. The very name Ruth means friend or companion. And this woman not only lived up to her name, but also became part of the ancestral line leading to King David. And from King David, as we know, if you're a good Bible student, came the Messiah, Jesus Christ. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at the book of Ruth, and we're going to look at how it relates to the Feast of Pentecost. Now first, point number one is let's get some background information on the book of Ruth. Let's get some background information on the book of Ruth. Let's go to the book of Ruth. And let's look at a couple of passages there in Ruth. We have Joshua, Judges, and then we have Ruth. We're going to look at Ruth chapter 1. And before we go to the verse in chapter 1, let me give you a little background. There was a woman named Naomi from Israel, from Bethlehem. She and her husband and her two sons had moved to the land of Moab because there was a famine in the land of Israel and there was food in Moab. So they moved down there, and to make a long story short, the two sons married Moabitish women, and Naomi had a husband. Well, Naomi's husband died, and so did the two sons. And Naomi, with her two daughter-in-laws, is thinking about coming back to Bethlehem to live. This is where we pick up the story. In Ruth chapter 1, verse 4. Now they, the sons, took wives of the women of Moab. The name of one was Orpah. The name of the other was Ruth. And they dwelt there about 10 years. Then both the sons died, and so the women survived her two sons and her husband. So Naomi, the two daughter-in-laws, were all widows now. So the background is that Ruth was not an Israelite. Ruth was of the land of Moab. And Ruth was a Moabitess. She was of the tribe or of the lineage of Moab. Now, you remember where the Moabites came from, children of Ammon, the Moabites. You remember Lot coming out of Sodom and Gomorrah, and the whole countryside was destroyed, and the two daughters got their father drunk, and by him were engendered the two races that became the Moabites and the Ammonites. And so this was the lineage of Ruth, not a very prestigious lineage, so to speak. So she was of the tribe or the land or the lineage of Moab. Now, the history between Israel and Moab was not very good. Sometimes it was better than at other times. But there was a lot of animosity and hatred between the Israelites and the Moabites. And let's look at the Deuteronomy chapter 2, or chapter 23. Keep your place in Ruth, because we're going to be coming back and forth to Ruth. But let's look at what it says in Deuteronomy chapter 23. Deuteronomy 23. And we're going to look in Deuteronomy 23 at verse 3. An Ammonite or a Moabite shall not enter the assembly of the Lord, not even to the tenth generation. None of his descendants shall enter the assembly of the Lord forever, because they did not meet you with bread and water on the road when you came out of Egypt, and because they hired against you Balaam, the son of Beor, from Pethah of Mesopotamia, to curse you. Now we remember all of the situation that occurred. The children of Israel were coming into the promised land. They'd wandered for 40 years. The older generation had died. The two spies were sent in. Rahab the harlot. The red scarlet cord or cloth hung out the window. The destruction of Jericho. And the children of Israel are going to go into the promised land. Now as they were traveling into the promised land, they were going to pass through the land of Moab. And the Moabites would not give them permission to go through their land. And so they had to detour many, many miles, and it was a very hard detour. And so because of this, because the Moabites did not welcome the children of Israel into the promised land, there was a lot of tension between the Moabites and the Israelites. In plain English, they hated each other. They couldn't stand each other. And that was the reason why in verse 4 of Deuteronomy 23, it says, because they did not meet you with bread and water. They didn't help you. They didn't, you know, they weren't concerned about you. They didn't want anything to do with you. Now, let's go to Judges chapter 3. Let's look at how sometimes the relationship between Israel and Moab was better than at other times. Let's look at Judges chapter 3. And look at verse 12. And the children of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord. So the Lord strengthened Eglon, king of Moab, against Israel, because they had done evil in the sight of the Lord. Then he gathered to himself the people of Ammon and Amalek. They went and defeated Israel and took possession of the city of Psalms. And so the children of Israel served Eglon, king of Moab, 18 years. So the children of Israel were in bondage and tribute to the king of Moab. So once again, things were not very well between the two nations. Let's go to Ruth chapter 1. In Ruth chapter 1, verse 1, it says, now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land. And a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. So by this time, relationships were good enough that you could go and live in Moab without any problems. So sometimes the relationship between Moab and Israel was good. Sometimes it was not. But most of the time, it was not very well. And this all stemmed from the children of Moab's refusal to let the children of Israel travel down their highways. You remember King David? And King David is fleeing from Saul. And where does King David go? King David goes to the land of Moab to live there. So the tension and the feelings between Moab and Israel went back and forth. And Ruth was of the lineage of Moab. She was of this people. You can imagine what kind of attitude the Israelites would have to a woman coming to live in their land with a Moabitess daughter. Now, point number two. Why would the Jews select a story about a Gentile woman to be read on the Feast of Weeks or on Pentecost? Why did they select this book? Well, there's several reasons. One is found in the book of Ruth, chapter 1, verse 22. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law. You remember the story Ruth is getting, Noemi's getting ready to come back. She's a widow. Her daughter-in-laws are widows. Oprah's a widow. Ruth is a widow. And she's getting ready to come back to Bethlehem, leaving Moab, the home of these two women. And Orpah goes back to her people and leaves Noemi. And Ruth says, no, I'm not going to leave you. Wherever you go, I'm going to go. Where you live, I'm going to live. Your God is going to be my God. Your people are going to be my people. And so Ruth and Noemi come into the land of Bethlehem. Now we're asking the question, why did the Jews select this book? Here's one of the reasons. Verse 22 of Ruth 1. So Noemi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab. Now they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Now you remember the barley harvest. You could not harvest the barley till the wave sheaf was cut. When the wave sheaf was cut, then the barley was harvested. So apparently, the days of unleavened bread had just ended because they were harvesting the barley, which meant we had the Sabbath in the middle of the days of unleavened bread. The next day was a wave sheaf offering. Then after that, they could go in and harvest the barley. So we have here this story taking place from the beginning of the ending of the days of unleavened bread to when Pentecost began. So the time setting was around the time of Pentecost. That was one of the reasons that the Jews read this book during this time, because of the time setting. So in Ruth chapter 2, verse 23. So she, Ruth, stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of barley harvest and wheat harvest. So she dwelt there with her mother-in-law. So this all occurred during the weeks that led up to Pentecost. Now, Pentecost by the Jews is called the Feast of Weeks. There were 7 weeks counted. So during the 7 week period, this would be when the story of Ruth took place. So the time setting is Pentecostal, so to speak. Secondly, another reason that the Jews selected this book was because of the marriage. The book leads up to the marriage of Ruth to Boaz. That's the final thing that happens. Ruth ends up marrying Boaz. And a marriage is a covenant or an agreement. The Jews accepted, the Jews looked onto their relationship to God, their imperfect relationship to God, as a marriage, as a covenant. You remember God said that I'm going to write you a bill of divorcement? So Israel and Jesus, the God of the Old Testament, were married. It was a marriage relationship. And so because a marriage is taking place here, this was when this was another reason that the Jews selected this book to be read. Notice Ruth chapter 1, verse 16. But Ruth said, entreat me, or don't make me go back, don't make me leave you, or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. And the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts you and me. I'm going to be with you till death separates us. Sort of sounds like a marriage agreement, does it not? And so what the Jews said is this typifies the relationship between our nation and the God of the Old Testament. It was a marriage relationship. We were married to the God of the Old Testament. And this story here deals with a marriage. Deals with a marriage, and it deals with a covenant. Let's go to Exodus chapter 24. Once again, hold your place in Ruth. Exodus chapter 24. And we're going to look at this covenantal relationship. Exodus chapter 24. Verse 3. So Moses came and told the people all the words of the Lord and all the judgments, and all the people answered with one voice and said, whatever God has said, we're going to do. We agree. We agree. Verse 4. And Moses wrote all the words of the Lord, and they rose early in the morning and built an altar at the foot of the mountain and the 12 pillars according to the 12 tribes of Israel. Then he sent young men of the children of Israel who offered burnt offerings and sacrifice peace offerings of oxen to the Lord. And Moses took half the blood and put it in basins, and half the blood he sprinkled on the altar. And then he took the book of the covenant and read in the hearing of the people, and they said, all that the Lord has said we will do and be obedient. And Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, this is the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you according to all these words. So marriage is like a covenant. The children of Israel were married to the God of the Old Testament. The Jews were married to the God of the Old Testament. And in the book of Ruth, we have a marriage story. So that was another reason that the Jewish people read the book of Ruth during the Feast of Weeks. Another reason that the Jews read the book of Ruth during the Feast of Weeks is that Ruth is an ancestor of King David. And the Jewish people held King David in very, very high regard. Ruth chapter 4, the last few verses in the book of Ruth. Ruth chapter 4, verse 18. Now this is a genealogy of Perez. Perez begot Hezron. Hezron begot Ram. Ram begot Amminadab. Amminadab begot Nahshon. Nahshon begot Salmon. Salmon begot Boaz. And Boaz begot Obed. And Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David. So Boaz was a great-grandfather of King David. And Boaz was married to Ruth. Ruth was married to Boaz. So Ruth and Boaz's marriage led to the birth of King David. And if you want to extend it even further, King David, his line led to the Messiah. Now, there's something very interesting also. Let's go to the book of, let's see if I can find it, book of Matthew. Book of Matthew. Hold your place once again in Ruth. We're going to go to Matthew chapter 1. Notice verse 3. Judah begat Perez, and Zerah by Tamar. Perez begat Hezron, and Hezron begat Ram. Ram begot Amminadab, same genealogy we were reading before. Amminadab begat Nahshon, and Nahshon begot Salmon. Salmon was a father of Boaz, who Ruth married. But notice who Salmon married to make Boaz. Salmon married Rahab. Remember Rahab the harlot? Salmon, Boaz's father, Boaz's mother was Rahab the harlot. Jewish tradition says, you can't prove it out of the Bible, but Jewish tradition says that in verse 5, Salmon was one of the two spies that went into the promised land. Remember the two spies went into the promised land and they spied out the land and they were hidden by Rahab and she sent the men looking for them on a wild goose chase. And then the men said, okay, if you'll hang this red cloth or thread or cord on the window, we're not going to destroy you. All right? And so she did. Well, one of the spies, according to Jewish tradition, was Salmon. So Salmon married Rahab, and Salmon and Rahab had Boaz. Boaz married Ruth. So Boaz's mother was Rahab the harlot. Once again, the lineage is not very great in some respects, which kind of is interesting compared to our lineage and our acceptance of the covenant, which we'll get to in a minute. So one of the other reasons that the Jews read the book of Ruth during the days of Pentecost, during the Feast of Weeks, was that Ruth is an ancestor of King David. There was another reason, and this had to do with what it says in Leviticus 23. Once again, hold your place in Ruth. Let's go to Leviticus 23. Leviticus 23, as you all know, is a holy day chapter. Now, if you read the book of Ruth, hold your thoughts on Leviticus, and let's go back to the book of Ruth. If you read the book of Ruth has a lot to do with gleaning. You know, glean in my field. Don't go glean anywhere else. Boaz leaves a little for her to pick up. And where does this law about gleaning come from? Notice Leviticus 23. And we're going to read in verse 21. Now this has to do, verse 15 has to do with Counting from the Sabbath, the wave shoe offerings, seven Sabbaths shall be complete. Count 50 days. The word 50th means Pentecost. And notice what else goes with it. Verse 21. And you shall proclaim on the same day, that is a holy convocation to you, 7 weeks later. You shall do no customary work on it. It shall be a statute forever in all your dwellings throughout all your generations. Notice what it says, and this is a Feast of Weeks or Pentecost. Notice what it says about Pentecost in the next verse. We often overlook this. Verse 22. When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not wholly reap the corners of your field when you reap, nor shall you gather any gleanings from your harvest. You shall leave them there for the poor and for the stranger. I am the Lord your God. Isn't it interesting that one of the commands about Pentecost was that we make provisions for the gleaners? And Ruth was a gleaner. She was gleaning in the field of Boaz. And so that's another reason that the book of Ruth is read during Pentecost, because it has to do with gleanings. And gleanings are mentioned in the book of Leviticus. Now, third point. What can we learn us by looking at the book of Ruth as it relates to Pentecost? There is a powerful analogy between the church and Christ. The church and Christ. If you look at the Bible and what it says, you'll understand that Jesus Christ is our husband. We are going to marry Jesus Christ at the marriage supper of the Lamb. So Christians, you and I, are betrothed to be married to Christ. We are in the process of being married. We're supposed to present ourselves pure and clean. We're supposed to make ourselves ready, the bride of Christ. So there's analogies between Christ and the church. In the church, or in the Bible, the church is always typified as a woman, either a very good woman and pure woman, Revelation chapter 12, the church, the moon and the stars and all that, or an evil woman of ill repute, Revelation 17 and 18, the whore that rides the beast and dressed in red, who's drunk with the blood of all the saints. So a good church or a bad church are typified by a woman. So we have here the woman, Ruth, who's going to marry Boaz, the Messiah. And Boaz is a Messiah type, and Ruth is a type of the church. So our first point in this third point is that Ruth represents the church today. Ruth represents the church. Let's go to Ruth chapter 1 once again. Ruth chapter 1. And notice verse 4. Now they took their wives of the woman of Moab. Ruth was of the land of Moab. And the land of Moab was an idolatrous land, more so than Israel. They often engaged in human sacrifices, the Moabites. Hold your place there in Ruth, and let's go to 2 Kings chapter 3. 2 Kings. 2 Kings. 2 Kings chapter 3. And we're looking at Ruth representing the church. 2 Kings. Who is the church? Us. 2 Kings chapter 3, and we're going to begin to read in... Well, before we read this, let me mention something to you. You remember the story of the children of Israel coming into the promised land. You remember Joshua. You remember Jericho circling the city. Ruth hanging the thread down. Rahab hanging the thread down. That part is not going to be destroyed. You bring your family. You'll be safe in there. They circle the city so many times, blow the trumpets and all this. We all know the story. What happens? The walls of Jericho fall down. And then the soldiers march right up into the rubble over the walls and they take the city. You ever wondered why the walls of Jericho had to fall down? Why couldn't just the gate open magically? Or something like that. Why did the walls have to fall down? We're talking about Ruth being a Moabitess and what kind of culture she came from. We're looking in 2 Kings chapter 3, verse 27. 2 Kings chapter 3, verse 27. Let's start with verse 26. And when the king of Moab saw that the battle was too fierce for him, he took with him 700 men and drew swords to break through to the king of Edom, but he could not. So he tries to take a group of men to break through to kill the king of Edom so the battle would be over, but he couldn't do it. The battle wasn't going very good for the king of Moab. Notice verse 27. Then the king of Moab took his eldest son. This is from where Ruth came from. Then he took his eldest son, the king of Moab, who would have reigned in his place, and he offered him as a burnt offering upon the wall. And there was great indignation against Israel. So they departed from him and returned to their own land. The king of Moab offered his son on the wall. You know what that meant? That meant that they would kill their children, they would put them onto the wall of the city, and they would plaster over them. The walls of Jericho were full of human sacrifices. And that's why when Joshua came into the land, the walls had to fall down. So what I'm showing you here is that Ruth came from a very sinful background. Ruth represents who? The church. Where did you come from? Were you from a pristine, righteous background when Jesus Christ, the Messiah, began to call you? I wasn't. I was as worldly as they could be. And so were most of you, I would imagine. We were like Ruth. We were in the world. We were doing whatever the world did. We thought it was okay to do this and to do that. And so Ruth, her background typifies a background of us church members. And we were in the world, so we had to come out of the world. So Ruth, once again, came from a non-righteous background, but she overcame that. She overcame that. Let's go to Ruth chapter 1. Ruth chapter 1. Notice verse 16, the last part. And your God shall be my God. Ruth said, you know what? I'm going to give up my Moabitish ways. And the God that you serve is the God that I'm going to serve. And we as church members had to do that. We had to say to God, you know, the gods that I served before, I'm not going to serve them anymore. I'm going to serve the gods that you want me to serve. And that's what Ruth did. Ruth did that. And we as a church also have done that. We have come out of this environment. Let's go to Hebrews chapter 10. Once again, hold your place in Ruth. Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10. And notice what it says in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 35. Therefore, do not cast away your confidence, which has great reward. For you have need of endurance, so that after you have done the will of God, you may receive the promise. For yet a little while, and he who is coming will come, and will not delay. Just now the just shall live by faith, which is what Ruth had. But if anyone draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. Notice a couple of things here. Do not cast away your confidence. This is written for us, the church. Do not cast away your confidence, which has great reward. You know what Oprah did? The daughter of Noemi? She said, you know what? I'm going to go back into the world. I'm going to go back into the world. It doesn't bother me to go back and live like the world lives. And what happened? She cast off her confidence. Ruth, what did she do? Ruth endured. And we're supposed to be like Ruth. We're supposed to endure. How many people do we know that used to fellowship with us that no longer do? Because they didn't want to come out of the world. They wanted to stay in the world and do the things that the world does. The lesson for us is that we need to not be like that. We need to hold on and not cast off our confidence and wait on the Messiah, because the Messiah is going to come. I have friends, very close friends, who once went up with me to the house of God to worship. You can say the same thing. Who no longer worship the same God I do. They went, but they were like Oprah. They went back into the world. We need to be careful that we don't do that. Ruth decided to worship the true God. Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8. And we're going to look in Romans chapter 8. And we're going to look in verse 35. Romans chapter 8. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, or distress, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or sword? As it is written, for your sake we are killed all day long. We are counted as sheep for the slaughter. Yet in all these things we are more than conquerors through him who loved us. For I am persuaded, think about Ruth and her attitude. We need to be like that. For I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other created thing shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. What is it going to take to separate you from the truth? What's it going to take to separate me from the truth? Whatever that is, brethren, we have to remember the story of Ruth, who did not go back. She went forward. And that's a lesson for us. Ruth is a model of the church, and Ruth is a model of what we should be doing in the church. Another thing is in the lessons for us is that Boaz represents Jesus Christ. Boaz, the husband, the future husband of Ruth, represents Jesus Christ. He was the kinsman and he was the redeemer of Ruth. You remember the story about he tells, Boaz says that, yes, I can redeem you, but there's one that's closely more related to you than to me. In other words, related to the family you married into. And you remember the law of the kinsman at that time? If you had a brother, and a brother married somebody, and the brother died, and the woman was a widow, another brother in the family was obligated to marry the woman to continue her name. And that was the law of the kinsman. And if you did not want to do it, because you know you were never forced to do anything, if you did not want to do it, you gave the person your shoe or your sandal. You say, well, that's kind of funny. Well, nowadays we write little marks on a book, and we think that's legal. Back then, you in front of a bunch of witnesses, you gave them your shoe. And your name was stricken from public records. So you didn't have a name after that, because you refused to do what the law said you needed to do. That was the law of the kinsman redeemer. Let's see how Boaz fits this, and let's see how this law about the kinsman redeemer typifies what Jesus Christ did. A couple of things. The near kinsman had to be related by blood. So Boaz was related to Naomi's husband and the two sons. All right? So he had to be related by blood. Jesus Christ is our brother, is he not? By the virgin birth, when he had become human. Another thing is a kinsman had to be able to afford to redeem whatever it is they were redeeming. He had to afford to be able to take on this woman and all of the bills and the responsibilities. So there were some kinsmen that could say, I can't afford to do this. So he didn't have to do it. He couldn't do it. Another thing is the kinsman had to be willing to do it. So the kinsman had to be related, had to have the money to do it, had to be willing to do it. Jesus Christ is our elder brother. Jesus Christ, did he have a suitable payment price to redeem us? Yes, he did. It was his blood. Most valuable thing that there is was the blood of Christ. Did Jesus Christ want to do it? Oh yeah, you can read the Bible where he said he loved us. He was willing to do this. And this is what Boaz did. Let's go to Ruth chapter 2, and let's look at how Boaz, what kind of character did Boaz have? In order for Boaz to represent Christ, Boaz had to have good character. He had to be a righteous person, by analogy. What kind of person was Boaz? Ruth chapter 2, verse 4. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." Notice how the reapers, his workers, addressed him with respect. You can learn a lot about a person by talking to the people that are employed by that person. And you can learn a lot about employees by talking about the person that hired them. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about Boaz and his relationship to his employees. Boaz was very well thought of by his employees. And you can see that as the story of Boaz unfolds and Ruth unfolds. And Boaz instructs his workers and what they did and how they did it. They followed his suggestions to the letter. So Boaz was well thought of by his employers. Ruth chapter 2, verse 5. Then Boaz said to his servants, who was in charge of the reapers, "Who's that young woman over there?" He saw Ruth and he said, "Who's that young woman?" So the servant who was in charge of the reapers, verse 6, answered and said, "It is a young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. And she said, 'Please, let us glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves.' So she came and she has continued from morning until now, though she's rested a little in the house." Then Boaz went up and talked to Ruth. Notice how Boaz is very concerned with Ruth. Is Christ concerned with the church? Then Boaz says to Ruth, "You will listen, my daughter. Will you not? Do not go to glean in another field, nor go from here, but stay close by my young women." Boaz had women and men that worked with him. He said, "You go over there and stay among the young women and glean with them. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap and go after them. I have commanded the young men not to bother you. And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from the employees' water." You know, I've got water barrels for my employees. Feel free to go drink from those. So she fell on her face, bowed down to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner?" Why has Jesus Christ taken notice of you and me since we were sinners? You can rephrase it. And Boaz answered and said to her, "It has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother and the land of your birth, and have come to a people whom you did not know. The Lord repay your work, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." Then she said, "Let me find favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants." Even though I'm not an employee, you're treating me very nicely. Now Boaz said to her at mealtime, "Come here and eat of the bread and dip the piece of bread in the vinegar." Got a little Passover theme here. So she sat beside the reapers and he passed parched grain to her and they ate and was satisfied and kept back some. And when she rose up to glean, Boaz commanded his young men saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves and do not reproach her." So she wants to get in there and glean, you know, from the stuff we're harvesting. Leave her alone. Let her do it. "Also, let grain from the bundles fall purposely for her." So every once in a while, just let a little grain fall for her. She can pick it up. "Leave it that she may glean and do not rebuke her." Now, once again, brethren, let me just mention a little side note here. Ruth was a gleaner. You know, Boaz did not deliver the food to her house. Ruth had to work. I think our government could learn something about helping other people by reading these things, but that's another story. So she gleaned in the field until evening and beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of a barley. Then she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned, and her mother-in-law was like, "Wow, you really gleaned a lot. Where have you been?" So she brought out and gave to her what she had kept back after she had been satisfied. So Ruth even brings her mother-in-law some food from the lunch she had been provided. So here we see that Boaz was very, very concerned with Ruth, just as Christ is very, very concerned with the church. And how even though we are not worthy to be numbered among his people, you and I, Christ has put us there. And we have become, potentially, his son and his daughter. Now let's go to Ruth chapter 2, verse 20. A few verses from where we were reading. Then Naomi said to her daughter-in-law Ruth, "Blessed be he of the Lord who has not forsaken his kindness to the living and to the dead." You know what this means? You tend to read this and think like, boy, she's being very melodramatic here. But you know what she's really saying? She's really saying, you know, it's a good thing that Boaz follows the gleaning laws. Because not everybody leaves stuff for the gleaners. And Boaz leaving stuff for the gleaners has actually blessed us. Let me read it to you again. Then Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be he of the Lord who has not forsaken his kindness to the living and the dead." And Naomi said to her, "This man is a relation of ours, one of our close relatives." She was related to one of the sons or the husband that had died. Ruth the Moabite is, all right, so we'll stop reading there. So Jesus Christ is a near kinsman, like Boaz was a near kinsman. And Boaz could redeem Ruth. Romans chapter 6, verse 23. We're not going to go there. Should be in memory. What does Romans 6, 23 say? The wages of sin is death. The wages of sin is death. No future, no hope. Consider what would have happened if Ruth had not lighted upon the field of Boaz, or if Boaz didn't exist, or if Naomi died, then she would not have connection to this kinsman. There could have been a lot of ways where the story would have worked out where Boaz and Ruth would have not connected. And what this is showing us is that obstacles had to be overcome. Ruth chapter 4, verse 1. We're going to read about Boaz and how he's going to redeem Naomi. Ruth. How he's going to redeem Ruth. Now, here's what would happen. The living brother would say, "I'm going to marry my brother's widow." And with that marriage comes all of her debts and everything that encumbers her. I'm going to be her husband. And if she owned any property or if she was going to inherit anything, it would be in the lineage of the husband now. So it worked out for good or bad. Now, verse 1. Boaz was a very, very sharp man. Now Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the close relative of him of whom Boaz had spoken. You remember, you notice that it doesn't name him? It doesn't name the relative. So Boaz said, "Come aside, O such as one, friend. Sit down here." So he came aside and sat down. Nowhere does it mention this man's name. Remember I tell you what would happen to a man who didn't redeem his brother-in-law's, his brother's wife? His name would be stricken from the records. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, "Sit down here." So they sat down. So we're going to have, you know, what is a notary? You go to the notary and he notarizes your paper that you're going to buy this vehicle or that you're going to sell this property or that, you know, you're doing this. This is your will. A notary is a legal witness. That's all a notary is. Here we have 10 elders that sit down. They're going to be witnesses to what is going to go on. So this is a legal way of doing things. So they sat down. Then he said to the close relative, who's still not named, "Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, sold the piece of land which belongs to our brother Elimelech. And I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants and the elders of the people. And if you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, then tell me that I may know. For there is no one but you to redeem it, and I am next after you." And he said, "I will redeem it." So Boaz tells this man, there's a field that Naomi's husband owned. And it's yours to redeem. You're the closest relative. And you can buy it. You can redeem it and buy it. If you don't redeem it, let me know, because then I'll redeem it. But you're closer than I am. So the man with no name says, oh, sure, I'll redeem it. I want to buy it. He says, okay, that's good. But if you redeem it, with it comes Noemi. I mean, with it comes Ruth, the Moabitess. And he goes, oh, no, I can't do it. I can't do that because that's going to mar my inheritance. You remember the story about up until the 10th generation? Verse 4, and I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants and the elders of my people in the front of these notaries. If you will buy it, buy it. But if you will not buy it, then tell me that I may know. For there is no one but you to buy it. And if I am next after you, and he said, I'll buy it. Then Boaz said, on the day you buy the land from the hand of Noemi, you must also buy it from that Ruth the Moabitess. Which means you're going to have to marry her, the wife of the dead, to perpetuate the name of the dead through this inheritance. And the close relatives said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. You redeem it, my right of redemption, for yourself, for I cannot redeem it. For whatever reason, he said, I don't want this affecting my inheritance later. I'm not going to buy it. You can redeem it. I give you permission in front of all these witnesses. Now, this was a custom in former times in Israel, verse 7, concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm anything, one man took off a sandal and gave it to the other, and this was a confirmation in Israel. This is how the deal was sealed. We shake hands now. Back then, they gave them a sandal. Therefore, the close relative said to Boaz, buy it for yourself. So he took off his sandal. And Boaz said to the elders and all the people, you are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Mahan's, the sons, from the hand of Noemi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahan, I have acquired as my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brethren and from his position at the gate. You are witnesses this day. I'm going to marry Ruth. And you know what, brethren? That's exactly what Jesus Christ has done for us. Jesus Christ is entering into a marriage relationship with us. He is going to marry us. He was going to marry us and is going to marry us. Let's go to Ruth chapter 3. Verse 8. There was a harvest. At the end of the harvest, there's a get-together. There's wine and there's food and there's drinking because the harvest has ended. And the men go off to one area of the harvest floor to sleep and the women go off to another. And Ruth goes and sleeps at the foot of Boaz. Verse 8. Now it happened at midnight that the man, Boaz, was startled and turned himself. And there a woman was lying at his feet. This is the way that the woman told the man that she wanted to be redeemed. She was telling Boaz, I want you to redeem me. You know, nowadays, most of the times the husband, the man, proposes to the woman. But once in a while, the woman proposes to the man. Ruth was telling Boaz, I need to be redeemed by you. Verse 9, and he said, who are you? So she answered, I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative. You're a redeemer. Then he said, blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning. And that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich. Some women will tell you it's better to marry for money. Not always. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request. For all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman. The church is supposed to be virtuous. Are you and I virtuous? Are we living like the world lives? Now, it is true that I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. Stay this night, and in the morning it shall be that if he will perform the duty of a close relative for you good, let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you. As the Lord lives, lie down until the morning. So she arose, and she lay at his feet, and nothing happened. She lay at his feet until morning, and she arose before one could recognize another. And then he gives her some food. Bring the shawl in verse 15. Verse 16. Women, marry a man that has a little spark. When she came to her mother-in-law, Ruth, she said, "Is that you, my daughter?" Because it was still dark. Then she told her all that the man had done for her. And she said, "These 6 ephahs of barley he gave me. For he said to me, 'Do not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" Notice what Noemi says. Then she said, "Sit still, my daughter, until you know how the matter will turn out. For the man will not rest until he has concluded the matter this day." Boaz was a man of action. You know, he didn't think about it and meditate it for 3 years. He acted upon it immediately. And then we read in Ruth chapter 4 what happened with him redeeming Ruth and marrying her. Let's go to Ruth chapter 4, verse 13. One of the reasons that this has lessons for us is because it shows that Boaz and Ruth are playing the part of the Messiah in the church. Verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And when he went into her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a close relative, and may his name be famous in Israel." And so here we have the fact that now Ruth had a lineage. And that we can see down at the bottom, we've already read it, that Ruth was listed among one of the ancestors of David. And from David came the Messiah. So what happens here? In the book of Ruth, and think about Pentecost, in the book of Ruth, we see a wonderful story of love, commitment, conviction, and obedience. It bears directly on the church, specifically to the Feast of Pentecost. When was the church established? The giving of the Holy Spirit on the day of Pentecost, Feast of Weeks. Because of Ruth's faithfulness and her willingness to come out of paganism and all she had ever known, like we did, her family was blessed. Her children had much better lives than whatever she would likely have been able to provide had she stayed in Moab. If she had stayed in Moab, she would have been an idolater. Brethren, in our lives, there comes many times junctions. And Ruth was at one of those crossroads, brethren, and she could have gone back to Moab. And if she would have gone back to Moab, she would have married a man of Moab that would have children in that culture. She would have been an idolater. And instead, she decided to go the other way, to marry Boaz. So we often have choices to make, brethren. I mean, sometimes it can be with marriage. And sometimes they're more mundane things like, what are we going to watch on the television? How am I going to spend my time? Am I going to study? Am I going to pray? Whatever it happens to be, those choices are going to affect our future. And so it is with all of us. We are coming out of a world dominated by pagan ideas and philosophies. We have all had the opportunity to return to the world. There's nobody here forcing us to sit in here and listen and be part of the church. We can go back into the world if we want. Some of those we have known and have loved in years gone by have chosen to return, just as Orpah, Ruth's sister-in-law, did. We cannot do that, brethren. We must remain faithful to the end, and the end result will be well worth it. Ruth was a faithful friend and companion, and God granted her the blessings of being an ancestor of David and eventually of Christ. So there are many, many lessons for us as they concern Pentecost that we can glean from the book of Ruth.